to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about mental health on the show today and focusing on, to begin the show at least, on how you can build your self-confidence. And who better to help us with that than Dr. Shyla Morgain? She's a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She specializes in using mind-body medicine to treat mood and anxiety disorders, injury rehabilitation, and a whole lot more in athletes. She is also a sports psychologist to UW Badger student athletes. And as we talk with Dr. Morgain, I hope you join in. How'd you put an end to negative self-talk? Maybe, or get rid of that imposter syndrome. Give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dr. Shyla Morgain, good to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Self-confidence. How do psychologists define self-confidence?
Well, confidence is at its heart believing in yourself, and from that belief, acting in a way that really honors your self-worth. So you might be advocating for yourself, speaking up, taking care of yourself, forming good social relationships, and feeling a sense of peace and calm because you know you're enough. And when we look at studies estimate that 85% of Americans experience low self-esteem, and we see a similar percentage worldwide. And when I look at my practice and working with clients, I would say the majority of people don't feel good enough. And when we have that low self-esteem, it can impact us. We can have self-doubt. We can have a negative self-perception. And it can impact our relationships and our social interactions.
Yeah. I mentioned the imposter syndrome. Maybe you could talk about what it is. And is it the same thing as low self-confidence?
Well, low self-confidence or low self-esteem can permeate all aspects of one's life, like feeling good enough to get a job or a promotion or in a relationship or kids studying for school. When I think of imposter syndrome, I think of somebody who is in maybe a new job or somebody going off to college, and you are comparing yourself against everyone, and you feel like you simply don't measure up, that people perceive you as being more competent than you actually feel. And people trust their feeling versus maybe their potential. And what I want to talk to you about is confidence is a skill, and sometimes that feeling of not being good enough, actually, the majority of times, it's not true because we have much more potential than we even realize. And just because you can't do it today doesn't mean you won't be able to do it tomorrow or the week ahead or month ahead. So if confidence is a skill, we can talk about some of those skills. We can really work on it to grow ourselves into the people that we want to become and that we're capable of being.
I am sure at some point or another I've gone through that kind of imposter syndrome myself. Do you think most of us do at one point or another?
Absolutely. If we're not playing it safe, if we're growing out of our comfort zone, I can imagine you, Larry, when you started this show, or you know, I can relate when I started grad school, there's a feeling that we don't measure up, we're not enough, we're not somehow not worthy of success, and that we can keep ourselves small. We can keep ourselves in that comfort zone. And one author talks about the upper limit problem, that the one problem to solve is our upper limit. And when we grow out, we go beyond that upper limit. I think of a video game and we go to the next level. It's uncomfortable. We may not have all the skills needed, but that doesn't mean we can't learn them. So, you know, we can think about when we feel that imposter syndrome, feelings aren't facts. Just because we feel like, hey, maybe I don't have what it takes, that feeling isn't a fact, isn't true. And I would say for everyone, we're much more capable than we even realize. But sometimes we give up too quickly. We don't get the support we need. We don't take action and work on things to grow to that next level, to up level, to get to the outside that comfort zone.
Yeah. I was lucky. I had parents who didn't overly praise me, but they certainly let me know that they had plenty of confidence in me and were willing to give me some free rein to have the confidence in me to do that. I wonder if how you sort of are raised has a difference, makes a difference in your self-confidence.
Yeah, that's a great point. Sometimes parents inadvertently can reduce confidence if they praise their child for, or overly praise that child for winning, getting the A, getting first place. That can put a lot of pressure on kids. That can create some dissonance. Hey, mom and dad, thinks I'm the best, but actually I don't feel like I'm that. So I always encourage parents to praise effort, not outcome, to praise the hard work. And sometimes there's a helicopter parent that overly does things for their children, so they don't learn that some of the skill sets. So I also encourage parents to give permission for their children to make mistakes, to fail sometimes, to try different things, and in praising the effort, problem solving. Okay, yeah, you didn't do so well on that test, but what can you do differently next time? How do you stick with a task and keep at it to learn and grow to be able to master it? Sometimes giving children something to work on mastery is really important. And I think most important also for ourselves, for our children, for even our communities, is learning to talk kindly to ourselves. What we find is that self-compassion, being kind to ourselves, creates a much more stable sense of self than praising the outcome, than wanting to win, wanting to be the best. So some days, yeah, we're going to do that, but a lot of days we're not. And then we feel like, oh, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe other people perceive me this way, but I'm not measuring up. So kindness, talking to yourself kindly, giving yourself grace, and really trying to stick with something, even if it takes time and time and time again, eventually we'll succeed.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned parents. Are there other certain life events that often lower people's self-confidence?
Well, I think a lot of things. I think just the society we live in, there's a lot of messaging in media that we're not good enough. We need to buy this product, do this different thing, work on this till we'll finally, it's kind of like a carrot dangling. We'll finally get good enough if we do all these things, only to know the line has moved and we're still not good enough. So I think there's a lot of messaging in our culture. I do think, you know, sometimes in schools, people can, there's social pressure to look a certain way. And if you're not, you're shamed. For some people, they've been bullied and they've internalized that. And sometimes, you know, somebody can be in a sport or an activity where somebody's a winner and others are a loser, only to feel like, oh, I didn't win, so therefore I must be a loser. Not just I lost, but I must be a loser. So I think there are a lot of forces that we have grown up with and still have that kind of make us feel like, oh, you know, I'm low on confidence.
Yeah.
I don't have what it takes.
So low self-confidence, I guess, could be a learned behavior. And I imagine at the same time, confidence could be a learned behavior as well. If you're low confidence, you can learn to have better self-confidence.
Absolutely. I think of my daughter who's three, who did soccer. Three-year-old soccer is pretty fun to watch.
I remember those days. I remember those days.
And the beginning of class, the coach has the kids say, try your best and believe in yourself. And it's been fun to see these little three-year-olds adopt that as a mantra, try your best and believe in yourself. So yes, confidence, you know, we can think about how do we instill it early on in our children. But as adults, I think a lot of us have some healing to do around building up our confidence. So way deep inside, we feel good enough. No matter how we're doing on a particular day, at our core, we feel we're enough, we're deserving, we have what it takes.
Let's talk about maybe some day-to-day strategies you can use to improve your confidence. First, I'm sure self-talk plays a big role in your confidence.
Yeah,
what is self-talk? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I really want to highlight confidence is a skill we can strengthen. So one, paying attention to our own inner voice. I think a lot of us grew up thinking if I beat myself up, if I criticize myself, I'm going to go farther, further, I'm going to learn. And we actually find that negative self-talk erodes confidence. It diminishes how we feel about ourselves. So I think number one is be kind to yourself. You can think about somebody you care about who's struggling, how you might talk to him or her. You can think about somebody who cares about you, what they might say to you. So having some grace for foibles, failures, mistakes, think about, there may be something to learn from that of what you do differently or what you need to work on, but focus on, being kind, and then what is possible. So what you, again, might say to a child who's struggling on a particular day might help them problem solve, but encouraging them and having them try again and really believing in their potential. I think that same kind of self-talk. So you could do thought stopping. When you have a negative self-thought, say stop, or you can see a stop sign, or people clap their hands or snap a little rubber band on their wrist to stop, and then choose a different thought that promotes peace of mind, makes you feel good, kind of like that inner cheerleader. That is powerful.
Yeah, I was thinking about my golf game. There are a couple of places on the particular golf courses where I've done really well. I hit a great shot. And I try to channel that when I'm at other spots where I haven't had that good of luck. So I guess I'm talking to myself there and saying, well, remember how you hit that 165 yards across that big chasm, without any trouble? This is the same thing. This is the same thing. Just do it.
Yeah, and Larry, you're using a second technique that's powerful, which is what I call the flip back, flick forward. So everyone's had past successes. You had that hitting the 165 yards across the fairway. That is kind of like a highlight reel moment for you with golf. So we've all had that, a time where you did well or even turned out better than expected. You had something go wrong, but you resolved it. So you can flick back in time, remember it, relive it with some visualization, re-experience it almost like virtual reality, and then come into the moment. So you flick forward, seeing yourself having a similar, if not better, outcome. What's powerful about that is we trust our past experiences more than that negative self-talk in the moment. So if you find you're really getting ruminative, you're beating yourself up, do that flick back, flick forward, flick back to a time that went well or turned out better than expected, and then flick forward, seeing yourself having a similar, if not better, outcome. That can really override negative self-talk because you've had some of those past successes. And I encourage whenever something does go well, add it to that highlights reel. Kind of re-experience it, remember it, say, okay, that's my personal highlights reel I can carry forward.
Dr. Shyla Morgain, our guest today, as we talk with her about self-confidence. And you can join in. I haven't given the number. Well, let me do it right now. Here's how you join us. 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Coming up at 11:30, our topic is traumatic brain injuries. Right now, though, we're visiting with Dr. Shyla Morgain about building your self-confidence. And again, you can join 800-642-1234, email to talk@wpr.org. One of your suggestions is to speak up and use your voice. And what do you mean by that?
Absolutely. Sometimes we can keep ourselves small by not participating, becoming invisible, and by actually using your voice, saying something, participating, speaking up, that is really important. So you can think about maybe those people who are in school raising your hand and saying something. If you're meeting at work, participating, bringing up one point. I think of studies that show in a meeting that has both men and women, women are much like much less likely to say something until one woman participates. When one woman participates, other women will start to participate. So be that person who participates. Mm-hmm. Even with family or friends, finding ways to make your voice heard, even if you're nervous, even if your voice is quivering, our voices are a way of expressing ourselves. So even just trying to say one thing, if, for example, if you're in the workplace, goes a long way, because we find that in the workplace, people get promoted not necessarily because of how well they're doing, but because they're advocating for themselves, they're pitching their ideas, they're asking for the raise. Think about just even challenging yourself. I have that a lot with my student athletes in class. Just say one thing. So the more you practice, the easier it will become. And I think that speaks to just taking action. We don't become confident by just sitting on our hands, it's by using your voice or taking action.
Robert in Green Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. This is a fascinating interview, and I'm listening intently as I'm driving south on 43. So, question I was actually going to ask about, I'm in my mid-70s, and about athletes aging and lacking self-confidence, but the more I thought about it, I have another question about self-confidence. I'm trying to start writing, memoirs, my life memoirs, and I lack confidence in writing, and I get, not writer's block, but I just get kind of stuck. Any suggestions? And is there a good app for writing biographies or autobiographies?
Shiloh, what do you think?
Oh, thank you. You bring up two great points. I think with writing, we can have the inner critic right alongside while we're writing. So they say for writing, to first think about putting all your thoughts down on paper. That's not the time to edit. That's time just for idea generation. So really giving yourself permission, no matter how silly or far-fetched, just to put it down on paper, number two, you might have a trusted person who could be a cheerleader, who could even send you a note saying, great, that's wonderful, tell me your ideas. That could be part of that supportive companion. And only once you have your ideas down to then go back and do some of that editing. And I think with writing, along with other goals, it can be really powerful to work towards a larger purpose. When I hear about memoirs, and you might have family members or friends you want to share some of your life experiences with, that is a strong mission. So when we do something for that larger purpose, for others, then it matters less if we're scared. When we think about that positive difference and courage, that positive difference we can make, our courage is strengthened, because those words you're writing are going to contribute to maybe your grandkids or even great-grandkids. So it'll contribute to the well-being of others, and that can strengthen courage. And you mentioned being an athlete later in life, and I think sometimes we can compare ourselves with, how we were when we were 40, or either other athletes who might be a decade younger. But I think about when we think about lifelong learning, that even if our body's aging, there's still part of us, they call it generativity, that's becoming more enlivened, that is learning and growing, then sometimes a goal like maybe working towards a race or staying in shape, that can really help us say, hey, there's still part of me that's that lifelong learner, that's strengthening, that's growing, that can really fuel that commitment, that action, that engagement in that task. That can be part of that confidence we're strengthening.
Yeah, good advice there. Robert, good luck with your writing. Call us back at some point. Let us know how it's gone. I'd appreciate it. You know, we can't get away without talking about the power pose, which you wrote about. And I thought, well, I'm going to try that. And I did. And it was really interesting. Why is that a good strategy to feel more confident? And what is it?
Yeah, Amy Cuddy has a great TED Talk on this. And the research, follow-up research, other people haven't necessarily replicated her findings, but I still like to talk about it. It's called the Superman or Superhero Pose. I actually personally do it before public speaking. I have a lot of my athletes do it before a race. And it's simply standing up, having your feet apart, and then creating some space. So you can, I usually put my hands on my hips while I'm standing and my feet are hip distance apart. Or even in a meeting, you're sitting, you can think about maybe putting your arms behind your head. Men tend to do this more than women, or just creating some space in your body. Take up physical space. The research with Amy Cuddy said people did that for 2 minutes. And then when they came in for a mock job interview, they were rated as having more presence. They were more likely to get hired in this mock job interview than people who didn't do the power pose. So if you're feeling you're having to go into, let's say, a difficult meeting or a job interview or a presentation and you're feeling nervous, if you go and make your body having more physical presence with this power pose, one is going to, I think personally, I find it calming my nerves. You're feeling embodied, and then people will perceive you as maybe having more confidence than you actually do. So try it out. And it's great, Larry. It sounds like it worked for you.
Yeah. And while you were talking about it, Lee Rayburn and I both stood up and raised our microphones up, and we did it, but only for a minute and or less. So the 2 minutes, and I think it would even help the writer, you know, just get you in the right mood.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, it can be helpful in so many different things.
Oh, Shyla, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Let's do it again soon. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was a joy to be with you today.
Dr. Shyla Morgain, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She's got my self-confidence up. I hope she's got yours up. We're going to turn our attention, though, to another kind of a serious matter, traumatic brain injuries and the impact they can have on your life or mine. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.